This is the Taranaki Museum Oral History Program. An interview with Mr. Jack Goodwin, who's visiting New Plymouth from Hawke's Bay at the moment. Today is August the 1st, 1997. We're recording on a Sony WM D6C cassette recorder using Sony ECM144 microphones. The interviewer is Mary Donald, and this is tape 4. Mr. Goodwin, we were talking yesterday about you going into the park and actually making up your initial plan about what you were going to do. And we got sidetracked onto doing all sorts of things like the illuminations and bits and pieces and things like that and the building of the fountain to commemorate the Queen's visit. Would you like to tell me, we haven't covered anything about the waterfall or the wind or the water wheel.
Well, actually, in the 1949 report, which was to proposals and recommendations for further development and management, the fountain, the waterfall was followed the plant collection as the second most important in my thoughts, but did not come to fruition until 1970 when we had a donation from the New Zealand Insurance Company towards the construction. That was a job that was carried out by two of the present senior members, or one retired now, and with the help of Mr. Alex Brody, the private engineer. And I felt that we're making good use of the water effects and replicating a waterfall that I much admired in Wales, which used a minimum of water. But with the possibility of water shortages in Kukura Park Lake, we made the provision so that the water could be recycled the same as it was with the fountains. The water can be used over and over again.
And was you actually initially thought of that particular site?
Yes.
So when you walked down past the Band Rotund, there it was. So that was the initial site that you had chosen for it.
Yes, yes. Yes, the impact on people coming around the bandstand and then heading along, and you see it in one dimension from a distance, and then you see it as you approach it, and then you hear it a bit more when you approach it.
It's lovely being able to walk right down to almost the foot of it too, isn't it?
These various factors, when I fixed on the site in my own mind, that would be the ideal place for it. And then with the hillside had been cleared of the pine trees above there, and then with the water spray to some extent and the cool air going up, we got a really fine growth of tree ferns all around there. They possibly have to cut some out in the future, but they start to drop their fronds into the fountain bowl, into the waterfall bowl. And the water's just drawn in from the lake and recycled. But there is a pond and a provision to stop any rubbish from going up into the system.
Certainly makes a outstanding feature.
Yes, well, I know E.O.E. Hill was mayor about that time, or no, before that. When he first admired the fountain, he preferred to see it in daylight, just the white water. And there's no doubt about it, but it was very much the same as this waterfall in North Wales. The limited amount of water going over rocks and coming down and catching the sunlight.
Mm.
fairly well down, but following more or less the water wheel at Puke'iti as being an attractive feature of any water effect. One thing that was mentioned was a hydraulic ram, the old-fashioned hydraulic ram, which did such sterling service in pumping water. That was always intended to be established somewhere between the children's playground and the fountain lake. But somehow or another, we never had time to get around to that one. But the idea of the water wheel from the Oxford Road was our link was the town and country. And to that, the Taranaki County Council contributed to the cost of the water wheel.
So that came from the Oxford Road? Was it from the old dairy factory there?
I'm pretty sure that was from the dairy factory there. It had to be rebuilt. And Jones and Sanford carried out the rebuilding part of it. But, of course, in the big flood last year, it was partly submerged, almost entirely submerged. And also the vandals seemed to manage to upset it quite a bit. If you set it travelling at speed, it could be dangerous, really, and almost wreck anything. Because after all, we had quite a lot of trouble getting a good foundation in the bottom there. It was so wet and muddy. And anyway, it's just another feature to add to the attractions of the park. And it's a link with the children's playground and paddling pool.
Mm. Makes a lovely sound too, doesn't it, as it trundles along?
Well, yes, it gives you more different sounds of the water, and even the creaking of a water wheel sometimes can be quite fascinating as it works slowly along. I counted the water wheel at Puke'iti as a decided acquisition. As far as the early visitors were concerned, and also, of course, it was used to generate electricity in the first few years, and today it's still used for pumping water, although now it's in need of repair at Puke'iti.
Mm.
The children's play area in Pukekura Park comprised two swings suspended on a pipe rail between two Lawsoniana trees when I came here.
In the same place as it is now?
Yes. Mm. But there were some big macrocarpa trees in there, some very big ones. And we cut them down and sold them as fence posts, and we raised some money towards other work in the park. I think it was mainly bridges and drainage replacement we were doing at that time. So all the bridges after the war over the Depression and then the war years, a lot of the bridges were treated timber before the Depression, or very little. In fact, the first treated timber that I used and was in a glass house up here, we had to send to Martin. That was before there was a treatment station up here. A treating
timber. All the way to Martin?
Yes. Sassador had a plant at Martin for preservatizing timber.
Yeah.
And so I sent down there for that lot, but and then they set up a plant here, or they started from the Sassendor, the Martin and Sassendor near Plymouth were in operation in those days, and once there was a demand for it, they bought the material up from Martin. So all my pardon me, my repairs to glass houses, to bridges, culverts and things, and I tried to replace them all with treated timber to ensure a longer, more useful life. In some cases, a lot of the bridges were very small ones, and so rather than rebuild the pipe, put in water pipes and tried to make a trickling sound as it went under and that sort of thing, but other than that, just a couple of boulders just above a crossing like that would just make the water ripple a little bit and give a tinkling sound. And if there was a drop, so much the better. Drop of a few inches. But the bridge below the Fountain Lake and the spillway there, and some of those were rebuilt. And there's one of the men from amongst the group that had been working, just tidying up around the place, turned out to be a very handy man doing those jobs for me. And I was reasonably practical at setting them out for him. And he did the boat maintenance, which was a great
thing. And who was that? Can you remember his name?
Sam Golder. Yes. And he took a pride in his work, and he made a reasonably good job, even of some of the finer work. And we had to reglaze the glass houses too after the Depression, and one or two of them. One or two had so much deteriorated to such an extent that we had to replace one of the Begonia house completely, but some of the other houses we had to just replace the roof and we had to build new frames and things like that.
So on your list, you say that
the plant collections to expand the plant collections to the extent that we're introducing the public to new plants or new varieties.
So it matters a true botanical garden.
In a way, actually, there's a little corner of Pukekura Park in the Gilbert Street area was set aside in 1876 for purposes of a botanic garden.
How do you define a botanic garden then?
Well, it's not easy to define it exactly, because everybody practically. A botanic garden is a series of plants set out in their botanical classification and order of vegetable and cut flowers and things like that, and usually just a series of rectangular beds.
Right.
But from the time that Kew was established, about 1820, I think, was a chap before the Hookers, and he started off and the Hookers, long service, followed on the effect that in making their collections, they would make them as attractive to the public as possible, as well as being of benefit to medical practitioners and other people interested in in the botanical nomenclature. And so the Kew set the example, and practically all the botanic gardens of the world have become showpieces. There's one or two botanic gardens in New Zealand that go back to the 60s, but most of the towns that even had a piece of land set aside under the Act at that time have just incorporated in their parks and ornamental parks today. There is a botanic garden in Napier. It's just a basin in the side of Bluff Hill behind the town, and It's quite attractive. And the cemetery up above that again. But it's quite an attractive sheltered, very well sheltered area.
So does the Phyllis Street or Phyllis Street area Botanic Garden still exist?
I suppose the title of it would be there somewhere, but I think it's been incorporated in Pukekura Park for many years.
Mm.
And there are one or two sections over there that were incorporated in the park for various reasons. Actually, at one time they set aside a town belt. You probably heard this story, set aside the town belt. And then when the eruption started out quite a way and led up to the Maori Wars, the then Governor General decided to take the land from the town belt and give it to these people so they had at least had a place to retreat to and some of them lost their homes.
That's where we get Belt Road from, isn't it? And I think this Belt Road actually comes from that, from the town belt.
Oh, yes. Well, it was across the top of the town. On the town, Belt Road would come down up there too. But, and then Pukekura Park came after the Maori Wars and they set aside a certain amount and then they added quite a number of sections. I've seen it on the plans. But, and then, of course, Brooklands was bequeathed to them later. That's including the bowl, that area up top there was from the Newton King estate. Instead of a bequest to the council, the suggestion was that it be made in land that to extend Pukekura Park. Probably was a very good idea at the time. Right in the centre of the town and extending right back to the south boundary. It might be argued it takes up too much rateable land. I don't know.
I've never heard that argument. I've always only heard praise about it. So where did you start getting your variety of plants? What was there when you arrived?
There was quite a reasonable collection of begonias. And Mr. Parker grew begonias. He had begonia houses and display houses. And he was a member of the park committee. And he was willing to help a little bit there. But the variety of plant material was limited and I thought, well, if we're going to attract the people back to the park, we need to be able to show them something different every time they come in. And I started off working on the good old standby was the fuchsia. And it can be treated as almost as a climber or as a standard or a half standard or just as a bush plant. It can be chopped back and you can do all sorts of things with it.
And easy to propagate.
And yes, you can bring it into flower at practically any time of the year you want to with the propagating fresh batches, cuttings. And I had an old friend in Christchurch, with the name of Smith. He was quite an athlete. He was a New Zealand athletic high jumper, I think, if I remember rightly. But he had a good collection on the hills near Sumner, Christchurch. And I'd gone up there, amongst other things, to learn just a little bit more about my chosen career. And I was a native planter too, so used up there who had a big collection of native plants. I used to visit him and the fuchsia man and the rock garden man, the different ones, different weekends and So I occupied all my time gathering as much information as I could. But anyway, we tried to keep it down to no more than 100 varieties. We didn't get them all at once, but they just gradually grow up, and the popular ones, the most popular ones, you keep going. And the only agreement we had was that we would not put them on show for at least 2 years to give him a chance to get his sales. So I had the privilege of getting in first with all the new ones, the option of buying all the new ones. And well, they weren't in his catalogue at the time that I got them. I just selected them off the bench when I was down in Christchurch, because that time I had family down there and we used to go. And I used to always go out and see my old friends. And the orchids, Mr. Parker was interested in the orchids, but in my report I'd worked on other species of orchids that would stand the cool conditions, and I felt that they could become quite popular. And they are now very popular throughout New Zealand. And Mr. Fuller has his own collection of those. But with the orchid collection, and when it comes to people came to offer us collections from all over New Zealand, I felt that before we could accept the responsibility, that we had to have an orchid specialist. And so by that time, the reserves department had taken a lot more of my time. I developed the reserves department, and I felt that Mr. Bullock could be take over the curatorship in order to attract a suitable, to provide a suitable salary to attract him to come back. But he's such a dedicated man that he never, I thought I would have lost all those qualified men once they completed their diplomas.
So he trained here under you, did he?
Well, no, he trained at Duncan and Davies, and he went to England to Sanders Orchid Nurseries. From there he got an entry to Kew, and he trained at Kew. And he went to Sweden and trained on hydroponics. And then he went down to Malta and worked with out-of-season chrysanthemums. By shortening the day length, you can induce a chrysanthemum to come into flower. They're short day length flowering plants. So, but he carried out the first experiment in New Zealand when he came to me, and we were able to flower chrysanthemums in February for a flower show, which was not quite unusual here in New Zealand. They require that shorter day length. So you have to cover them and keep them in the darkness for so many hours. But anyway, when he came back to New Zealand, it was just coincidence that he came back to New Plymouth. And we did get in touch with him and managed to persuade him to come to the park. And he's been one of a loyal team that has kept the park going and helped to build up the collections that I'd made. Mr. Jellyman and Mr. McDowell had qualifications from England, and like George Fuller had been to Kew. But then when they came here, they carried on and gained the New Zealand National Diploma in Horticulture. And Mr. Jellyman had been trained at Duncan and Dave. He carried on, and he earned the cocaine gold medal.
The which medal?
The cocaine gold medal for the highest award in the diploma examination. And I missed it because they raised the year before I qualified, there was quite an upheaval because somebody gained the award that other people considered shouldn't, and it's one of those petty things that people are objecting about. But anyway, they upped the requirement to a very high percentage to gain a chance for a recommendation for the medal. And I was involved in the war at the time. I was in the army. I was trying to write a thesis, and I was trying to get home going, and children were just babies. And so I didn't make much of a fist of it, I don't think.
You seem to have gathered quite an impressive number of supporters supporters and employees. So as I said to you earlier, I met up with Alan Jellyman this morning, and likewise George Mason, and they all spoke very, very highly of you, and George too, in regards to your contributions to the park and to reserves in general. And it seems that you managed to develop a really special team.
Oh, well, I try to do that wherever I've been, I suppose, but after the war you can realise the high more younger and active and highly qualified students, some of them just went to the war and didn't come back, and there was a shortage everywhere. And as far as the top jobs were concerned, the old timers carried on till they were 80, quite a few of them, just keeping the place going and supervising. But so I had to set out right from scratch, and either train or acquire by create a reputation, and you get a demand for people who wants to come and train with you. And we really, Christchurch had drawn people who previously would have gone to Dunedin for their training. Dunedin produced quite a number of people who took charge of parks right up to as far as Auckland anyway. And then Christchurch sort of took on the mantle of training top students and apprentices. And then for a short time I did it here. I don't know whether they even have apprentices now, but to start with, I couldn't put on. I had to make a special, because I was the only one with any qualifications. They had to make a special case for the first apprentice that I put on, and once he got his qualifications, I think I might have got somebody in from, Ian McDowell might have come in from overseas. Then Alan Jellyman came in from Duncan and Davies Nursery. And George came in later for the orchid, to take care of the orchid collection.
So when George came in, you had basically split, if I got it right, you basically split into two groups, and you were looking after the reserves in New Plymouth City Council, or City, and George was looking after Pukekura Park. Is that, have I got that right? I mean, you were actually over the top of George too. George was there to supervise the and maintain Pukekura Park as, under you, but you actually were now looking more at, have I got that right?
Well, I became more and more involved in the reserves, but, no, my title was, superintendent of parks and curator of Pukekura Park.
Right.
And actually, that was never changed. But George came in as a curator, which literally means the plant growing manager of a park, the man who's actually doing the management of the plants. That's the correct title for a curator. But he did tree surgery and as well as looking after the orchids and the glass houses, and he proved to be one of the better hands on tree surgery, but his specialty was to be the orchids and we had sort of got the park sort of running again by the time he came on the scene, and he was able.
That was in the late 50s.
Hmm?
That was in the late 50s, was it?
I can't remember just when he came. Oh, yes, it would be, I would think.
So you would spend your time, a lot of your time looking at.
In 57, Tom Wagstaff was my deputy in 57 when I went to England. I'd extended leave to study in England. And Tom Wagstaff was the deputy then. And he looked after it while I was away. And he went into business in town here. And then he later was the professional salesman.
Right.
Yeah. He died. My house in Franklin Park must have been about the last one he sold. I gave him a plant. Oh, I don't want it to sort of tape. I almost felt as if I might have been responsible for his death, although he'd had a heart attack before. And we were long, long time friends, and he looked after my wife and children when I was away in England, and looked after the park, and the foreman and the reserves looked after the reserves part of it while I was away. And then later, I think Ian McDowell came in as landscape planner. And he did work mainly for the reserves. We all worked from Pukekura Park right up until my retirement. And Alan came in as deputy superintendent. So he had the oversight. In my absence, he was in charge of a lot. Forestry, airports, and everything else.
So, what are the reserves? You say we've talked about Pukekura Park, but what other reserves are there that you were responsible for?
I've always been fond of Lake Manawahoe.
That's lovely, isn't it?
Yes, well, it was between the two engineers, one wanting the water for power generation and the other one wanting it for the water supply for the city, they seem to think it would be safer to have somebody else look